this is a topic we've been discussing on every event. E-foiling, I mean, these guys are fast. They're going 50 yeah. kilometers an hour, you know, and if you run somebody over with a foil at that speed, it definitely hurts. Pretty radical place, to be honest. It has big waves. It's very close to the rocks. It's a fast, powerful wave.
Fantastisch.
Perfect.
This episode is sponsored by Foil Sessions, the session tracker that let you share your whole session or just your favorite part with your friends and on the social networks. Go try it out with the link below. This is a
This episode is also supported by Surfears, but more on that later.
All right, welcome to a very special episode of Up on Foil. It is the SFT recap show. We look back on the first year of the SFT again with Tom Hartman, the one who actually organizes the whole thing. Thank you very much, Tom, for coming back on the show. How are you, man? Back from vacation?
No, not back from vacation, but we just finished the season. As you know, our organization is not only running the SFT, we also have two other world tours, the Kite World Tour and the Wingfoil World Tour, and we just finished 2 weeks ago in Brazil. And now we have a month. I wouldn't call it off time. We are not on holidays. We're planning a lot for 2026, obviously. But we don't have any event going this month. And it's a good time. I'm back home in Mauritius, and I'm trying to get on the water myself, obviously, as much as I can. This is important too, because I didn't have too much water time over the past couple of weeks and months. And and working a lot on next year's season.
I was just teasing you because I remember last time we spoke, there was so much you had going all the time. So did you actually get to take some time, some days off last year?
Well, I haven't been on a holiday, so I didn't go anywhere on vacation. No. Obviously, I mean, I always try to combine it a bit. I mean, if I work most of the days, you know, sometimes more, sometimes less, but when I'm around, I was in Brazil for 2 weeks for events, and then I extended another week in Rio and in Mexico, but mainly for the purpose to have a couple of meetings for upcoming events next year, but also obviously have a bit of a good time and enjoy South America without being on the competition day.
Very nice, very nice. So first we're going to look back on the last year, and then at the end we're going to look ahead and see what will happen. Tom, just a reminder, if you see me wobbling around, I'm standing on a balance board that Indiana sent me just to get a little bit of training in, work on my balance. Let's look back and let's start with the first event last year. That's actually where we met for the first time. It was in Düsseldorf, was the boat for me, an event that was so incredible, especially because outside it was super cold, around 0 degrees, yeah. Almost freezing, and inside it was summer vibes. How was that event for you? Because it was a first for you as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. This was, I mean, first of all, this was the first ever event we did indoors. This is already something very special, and it was the first event, or let's say the birth event of the SFT World Tour as well. So when we were in Düsseldorf, we've been running a Wingfoil World Cup with the Wind Machines and Windsurf Slalom, which is a tour that exists already for a couple of years, but the first time as an indoor event. And for the newly born SFT World Tour, it was the first event ever. And it was definitely a really special one because it allowed us to present both tours, you know, but especially also the SFT as it was just created. On a very big stage. Obviously, the boat is the biggest boat show in the world, 200,000 visitors. You know, you couldn't ask for a better place to launch something like a new tour, a new concept, a new idea. And we got so much positive and great feedback after the event. And I think it was also, the boat was giving us a big push, you know, for the SFT. I wasn't expecting last year. We wanted to start this new tour because we see the potential in these foiling disciplines that are non-wind powered. The pump foiling, the e-foiling, wake foiling, surf foil, downwind. But I wasn't expecting, you know, to do too many events in the first year. But due to the boat, it gave us a really big push and made the whole project very, very public. And we ended up doing we ended with 9 events in the end last year, all over the globe, in the US, in Europe, in Africa. So I think it's been a very successful first season for such a startup, if you call it this way. And I think the boat was contributing to that a lot, for sure.
Very, very nice. We're just going to run through these different events and event sites. And then at the end of this first part, I want to also like talk about the different modes on how the racing was, what you can take out of it, and how you will change it for next year. Düsseldorf, there was a parallel slalom, first a time trial, and then parallel slalom was super cool. The docks were, I remember, really great. The water, not as warm as it might have looked. We needed wetsuits for that, but still, like, it was super cool. The timing was stopped by hand. That was like a little unexpected, maybe, but as you said, it was a startup. So that was really cool. We're going to talk about the winners later. The next event was Pensacola. That was e-foil pump. Was there also a downwind?
Yeah, we did a downwind event as well, but this was actually not 100% planned. It was more because we had suitable conditions, we came up and sent the riders on a downwind. This was more like a show competition, so it was not officially, but we were lucky enough to get the right weather conditions to do a downwind. But the focus in Pensacola was obviously the pump and the e-foiling, and the whole event was hosted or packaged within the foiling week. You know, so the foiling week is originated in Lake Garda, where we also went later in the year. The foiling week is one of the first foiling events ever that's existing, I think, 11 years now, and started with foiling sailboat classes in Lake Garda 11 years ago. And now with board sports, foiling board sports getting more and more popular, they, let's say, wanted, you know, to get involved with that, and we were partnering up and integrated foil board sports in this huge foiling event that was covering different sailboat classes. We had meetings with even the motorized foil boat industry, you know, talking about ferry boats, about motorboats and on foils. So everything foiling was included in that event, and it was great to be a part of that. And also our third event. And being over in the US was also great to get a little taste of what actually the foiling community is about over there, because obviously every continent is a bit different, and I think it made us also understand better how the foiling community is working there. And for example, the pump foiling is growing also in the US, but it's definitely, I would say, a little bit less booming than it is in some European regions. But then on the other side, the motorized foiling disciplines like the e-foiling and also the wake foiling, these are big things in the US. I mean, there's a lot of people that actually have e-foils, a lot of people that have boats, and they're into wake foiling, which is not as popular in Europe, for example. So that was interesting for us to learn. But in the end, you know, foiling is foiling, and most of the people that do foil sports, they don't do one discipline only. And people that do wake foiling, they love surf foiling, they like get into pump foiling. If there is the possibility, they also do e-foiling. But yeah, it's kind of, I would say, connected in a different way. But it's been a great experience, and good to meet up with the community over there that is totally fired up about foil sports. Absolutely.
When I come from my perspective, I'm a pump foiler. I do wind foil sports. I've never been on a proper e-foil before. So for me, that whole thing is kind of scary, honestly. And if I think about racing, those guys probably won't stop. And it looks to me like a lot more, maybe excitement, but also like danger. How is that for you? Did they have to sign a waiver at the beginning that's like, it's all up to you, or how did you manage that?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a basic liability clause that everybody, it doesn't matter the discipline, it doesn't matter if that's e-foiling or pump foiling. So even this is the same on the kite and the wing tour, every athlete has to sign a liability waiver that they compete on their own risk, you know, and they cannot take anybody of the organization, of us or of the organizer liable.
Did you know that spending time in cold water and wind can cause your ears to slowly grow extra bone, sometimes enough to block them completely? It's called surfer's ear or exostosis, and it's part of your body's natural protective response. But ear problems aren't only about cold. Warm or polluted water can also lead to swimmer's ear, infection and inflammation, whether in pools, lakes, or the ocean. Surfears is the original patented earplug from Sweden. It's modular, customizable, and comfortable, designed to seal from water while keeping hearing and balance intact. Sustainably made and trusted by water people worldwide.
Safety is one of the priorities we have, that's for sure. You know, we don't want to have anybody get seriously hurt, and obviously it can happen and you can damage equipment and injuries can happen in any sport. But for sure, we are not reckless getting into competition and trying to get people to the hospital straight away with the formats we're doing. We're really trying to build the competitions in a way that there is a lower risk. But yeah, for sure, e-foiling, I mean, these guys are fast. They're going 50 kilometers an hour, you know, and if you run somebody over with a foil at that speed, it definitely hurts. But everybody on the tour needs to wear protection. They need to wear a helmet. They need to
Mandatory for them to start?
In the e-foiling discipline, it's mandatory to wear a helmet and mandatory to wear impact vest. But even we probably, you know, at the moment, we are not running any formats where people really race, let's say, shoulder to shoulder and can run each other over. It might maybe develop in that direction, but this would also require even more safety and even more safety equipment that is needed. And maybe we will see in the future people that, you know, do seriously e-foil racing, they will have a full body protection like motocross riders. They will have a full suit with protection from the legs to the head. For sure. I mean, e-foiling is a very spectacular discipline. And I think, although it's motorized and it's not, it's not, you don't foil by, or you don't fly by pumping the board with your legs. You press a button, you have an engine. It is a very physical discipline still. I mean, everybody
who has, as well, right?
It's very tactical and it's very still, you know, to do multiple laps and really going on the limit, it requires a lot of physical strength as well. I mean, it's similar, I would say, in a way, you know, if you sit in a Formula One car, it doesn't mean you don't need to be fit. You know? You need to still be totally focused. You need to be in shape. And the e-foil discipline in general, that we're running the format, we try to keep it very skill orientated, which means we are not running formats where it's about the maximum speed. We don't want just the guy who has the fastest e-foil be the winner. The courses we are running are very technical with a lot of like short distance, not the long distance runs where it's about the top speed. It's a lot about the turns and the technique, how you can turn your board. So you don't necessarily need to have the fastest e-foil, but you need to be able to maneuver it in the best way around the course.
Can you still maybe tell me and the listeners how that start went? Because for dock starting, it's obvious you need to start from a dock. But with the e-foil, I can imagine doing a start where you have to manage time and distance to the line and go full throttle over the line. Or maybe that you sit on your board or kneel on your board and just start to accelerate when you hit start. How did that work, or how was it? Was it different from place to place?
Yeah, we tried different. It's a good question. We tried different ways. Usually we are running our format. We are running first a time trial where it's about the best lap. And then according to the laps, you get seated in the ladder, competing head to head against another person. And in the time trial, you have a flying start, like you said. So you basically get in your foil and then you run around the course. And once you cross the start line, the time starts. And then when you cross the finish line, time stops. But then in the head-to-head race, where it's not about the time, it's a lying start. So you need to be lying on your chest, on your board. You cannot knee on it. And behind the start line, you have a start signal. And you can be moving before the green light, but you cannot cross the line and you cannot stand up before the green light. So you can move slightly on the board, but as soon as it's green light, you can stand up and you can cross the line. And that makes the starting technique an important part of the race, which is very interesting. Same like in pump foiling. I mean, obviously, if you want to be a win, it's not about just being the fastest one pumping. You need to have really good start. And it's similar in the e-foil race. You can see people that, you know, they be up in 2 seconds and accelerating full speed, and other people take 5 seconds, they're already behind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So that was Pensacola. Then on my list, I have Cape Verde surf foil event. I completely missed that. That didn't show up on my Insta bubble. How was that? And that was just surf foil. And was that the only surf foil event this year?
Yeah, that was the only surf foil event we did. And so we were in Cape Verde. It was actually a triple header event. So it means all our three tours were combined. It was in Ponta Preta, which is, I think, for those people who kite or windsurf or even wing foil, they are familiar to this or heard about this place. It's a pretty radical place, to be honest. It has big waves, or it can have big waves. It's very close to the rocks. It's a fast, powerful wave. And we had a kite World Cup, a wing foil World Cup, and a surf foil World Cup. And we ran the surf foil discipline as a tow-in event. So the riders got pulled in by jet skis. They didn't have to paddle in because the waves are fairly big and not so easy to paddle in on a surf foil. We didn't get it on really big conditions, unfortunately. So it was... not small. I don't say it was small, but it was for Ponta Preta on the, let's say, lower side of size, because it needs a certain size, this break, to be working. And it was quite challenging, I think, for the athletes, because the wave breaks very close to the rocks and it's a fast wave, and the riders got towed in by jet skis. We had a certain competition window, and we had finished kite, we had finished wing foiling, and we were waiting. There was a really good forecast for the last 2 days of the event, and we were waiting for the last 2 days to be able to run the surf foiling. But then the forecast didn't materialize as it was forecasted, like it sometimes can be, and we didn't get it as big as we wanted to. But we were still running it, and I think it was a great, it was a great show. But obviously, I would say, not the typical surf foil conditions that most people that prone foil would go in. As I did. Without the jet ski, it would not have been possible to foil there. And but still, we got some good footage. We made some good experience out of it, and we had some top guys from Hawaii competing there. It's been the only surf foil event of the year.
With surf foiling, there's always a discussion: strapped or non-strapped. How did you approach that question?
Yeah, obviously, as it was tow-in, it was mainly strapped. Most people that are starting on a tow-in are riding straps, obviously. And we didn't forbid to go strapless. Obviously, this was open. You could choose how you do it. But I think, if I remember right, there was everybody going on straps. Nobody was going on strapless, as I think on the competition that would be a paddle in, then you would definitely have probably 50% that go with or without straps. That's a different story. But we left it open. We were very clear. We said, like, you can use straps, you can use no straps. I mean, in a wave like Ponta Preta, where it's a fast, powerful wave, obviously it's a lot about also doing airs. Straps have a huge advantage. And so that's why everybody was going for that. But it will be interesting for the next season. We definitely want to get more surfful events on. And if it's without towing, then it will be interesting. And we're probably going to even run two divisions if it's a strapped or a strapless.
All right. Very nice. Then next up was Lucat. I plan on coming, couldn't come at the end. There was another e-foil and pump foil event. And I remember, like, the pictures, it was quite wavy. Not your typical dock start pump foil action.
Yeah, it's true. Like, Hoth had very challenging conditions, I must say. That was definitely not an easy one. We had the whole event that this was packaged in was the Mondial d'Hivon. And some people might know this as it's a wind sport event in the end. But also people know the region that it's usually a place where it's not windy every day. But so there was a Wingfoil World Cup, and then we had a SFT with pump foil and e-foil. And, you can't control the weather. And it was probably, I've been many years in Leuchart. I'm going there every year, either with a kite tour or the windsurf tour or the Wingfoil tour, and now with the SFT as well. And I think it's been the most windy Leuchart event I've been in my life in terms of how many days of wind we had throughout the week. I think it was a 7 days event, and we had wind pretty much every day. And those days that were dedicated to the SFT were pretty much the windiest days of the whole week. So definitely challenging. I think we had a very good first day of pump event with a lot of spectators that were interested. We used, the beach there it's a flat sandy beach, so you cannot build docks as in lakes. We were using start ladders, which definitely are also not that easy to start from, but we had a couple of start ladders. There was a provider from France called Pio's Ladders that was building all those ladders custom made for the event, and they did a really great job. And then on the second day of pump foiling, we had like 25 or 30 knots even onshore with waves. So we didn't run any dock start competition, and we ran a format. We were putting people upwind with a jet ski, and then pulled them over the start line and let them basically downwind to the beach with a Hawaiian style finish, running to the beach into a finish line. And I
was
think
it
that
a
was...
race, or was it like a surf action?
No, it was a race. It was a race where it was about time and about pumping and using the bumps to get to the beach. It was a racing format, and it was quite interesting. It was also like not the nicest weather, I must say. It was raining, and it was like, you know, this typical cold like hot days. But it's been good fun, and it's been, you know, it's the first year of the SFT, and obviously it's like you said, it's a startup, and for everybody all these sports are new, and it's a lot to experiment about. And I think I'm in the end, looking back at it, I'm happy we had so many different conditions to try a lot of different things to learn from it, not only us, also the athletes, or which formats can work. And we will obviously also learn from that and do probably a couple of formats. Like, this was more like a downwind competition than a pump foil competition. And we didn't count it into the ranking. We discussed this with the athletes before, because everybody came for a pump foil, a dock start event. We said, okay, what we're going to do on the downwind will not count into the other ranking. This is something separate, like a show event for the pump foil. We're only going to use the dock start heats we're going to do. And then we had also e-foil racing, and this was pretty much, e-foil racing was limited to only one day, and that day has turned out to be the windiest day with 35 knots.
Were you even managed to race then?
It was tough. It was definitely tough. We had to adjust the course to make it a bit shorter, and a lot of the participants actually struggled to start. You know, I mean, once you fly, you're kind of safe.
Yeah.
But imagine you're flying on an e-foil, like trying to be on the limit, and a gust with 35, 40 knots hits you. It just knocks you off the board, you know. So that has definitely been a quite challenging one and very technical race. You know, I think... Leuchart has been a difficult one, although it's a great event. You know, there's 50,000 people that come visit the Mondial d'Hivon. It's a big event, one of the biggest water sports events in Europe. A lot of good vibe, a lot of spectators, good promotion for these sports as well, you know, getting people to see pump foiling and downwinding and e-foiling. But it has been challenging. Yeah, the weather conditions have not been the easiest ones for sure.
But, you know, if you want to crown the best of the best, then the weather shouldn't matter that much, or... it's easier to separate like the mediocre ones from the best. So, you know, it's what it is.
No, exactly. That's in the end of the day, it was still you could see like who was more used to these kind of conditions, and like people that more like really only do it when it's glassy and no wind. And you had other people that were used to do this with a bit of wind. They adapted, let's say, a bit more easy.
Also, I think the starting situation, you talked about the ladders. I heard from some athletes, I didn't like that too much. but I was just saying to them, you know, it's what it is. It's the same for everyone. And over a season, then the best one's going to win.
Yeah. I mean, the starting standard is, this is a topic we've been discussing on every event. You know, I think when it comes to palm foiling, everybody is used to something different. You know, we had so many meetings with all the athletes and said like, hey, what would you consider is the perfect start setup on a dog start? And everybody has a different opinion. You know, some people are used to start on low dogs running. Some people do jump starts. No, they just drop start from a big pier and let the board drop in the water and jump on it without running. Some people want to have it 30 centimeters. Some people want to have it 70 centimeters high. So it's really hard to have the perfect setup for everybody. So we now kind of, I wouldn't say standardized, but try to find the best compromise, which is like a dog that's about 50 centimeters high and ideally not floating. So it's not moving. It's going to be stiff. Mm-hmm. But this is one of the more challenging parts. I mean, every sport is different. Like in Leucat, for example, there is no pier where you would be able to attach a rigid dog. So the only way to do it is either with a floating construction, but that might be even more difficult as soon as you have waves, because it's even moving more than a ladder. And then there are people that are used, you know, the Frenchies that live in that region, they're all used to start with these ladders. So they had no problem with that. But then you had, maybe some people from Switzerland, they used to have their dogs on a really calm lake and they had a hard time with starting and they need to get used to it. But like you say, I think in the end, you know, if you want to be the best in the world, you need to be able, and the best guys are able to start from everything. Yep. You know, it doesn't matter what it is.
The only thing that is, I think, true for every starter is the grip. If it is slippery, then it's just a little luck as well, or bad luck. But also that, you know, what you're going to do. Next up was in Sicily, a pump and e-foil event. If I recall correctly, there weren't too many people there.
Yeah, we had quite a good field on the e-foil side. It's been mainly the main discipline was the e-foiling, I would say, because that's what the event was known for, and they already did it in the past. And we plucked on the pump foiling as well, but we didn't have a huge number of pump foilers there. That is true. Also, as I explained before, I mean, we started the SFT with the Bolt and Cap Verde and Leucat was confirmed, and that was it basically for the year. And everything else came in after that, with the whole traction that the tour and the events got. And Sicily was an event that was super interested to be on the tour, but it was confirmed very late. So we didn't have, you know, a lot of time in advance to promote it and tell athletes that something in Sicily is going to happen. And we were just talking about a couple of weeks. So obviously, if that would be promoted with a couple of months in advance, it would have been attracting more people for sure, because the event also took place on a very popular weekend, which was the 1st of May. And basically on the 1st of May, which is a holiday all over the world, there are events everywhere. So a lot of athletes were already committed to go somewhere else and couldn't join it. But it's been a really nice event. I have to say, Sicily, I think, had a really special vibe. First of all, it's a beautiful location. And it's been an event that, for me, it was a special one because it's been an event that had a great combination of a beach party, you know, where people come it was a big party. It was a lot of spectators, like good vibes in the evening. And what I really liked about the concept, so the whole event is called the Water Experience and a Water Festival, but it's called Water Experience because it gives opportunity for people to get into different water sports. So they were offering packages for people to try out different water sports. And that's not only e-foiling and pump foiling, wing foiling, windsurfing, surfing, wakeboarding. So they got, I think, around 350 people that bought packages to really try out different water sports. And I'm not talking about this classic clinic of 5 minutes, you get on a board and you feel it. They were properly like organized in having like an hour of instructor to learn e-foiling, to do wing foiling. They were like really slotted in time slots, and the people were lining up to learn the sports. And I think the concept is really great to get new people. These were all people that never did any water sports before, to get new people hooked into these kind of sports. Doesn't matter which foiling sport or water sport it is. I think it's a great concept. And I really like that about this event. And we are planning to come back there for 2026 as well. Because it's just been, in the end, it's not been easy, but in the end, everybody left with a smile and had a really good time.
That's what it's all about.
Exactly. And in a good place, yeah, as I said.
Very nice. Next one was back in the States, the Atlanta Foil Fest. Some pumping and e-foiling again.
Yeah, exactly. This was an event that got created actually with my friend Jason Burton from Burton Outdoor Adventures. He runs a foiling business and a school out in Atlanta, or a bit outside of Atlanta. And we met, we got contacted by him also after the boat. And then we met in Pensacola and the first event we did in the U.S., and we worked on that concept. It was the first time, you know, this event was happening. And it really, I think, in its first year already was a big success of foiling in the U.S. You know, I mean, there are events happening, but it's been the first event where all these different foil sports were coming together. And it was a really high level of competitors on all the sports. So that we had pump foiling, e-foiling, but then there was also a wake foil competition that was run by the FSRL. And I would say all the best guys from the U.S. were there, and it had good prize money. It was well organized. It was a great location. It was in the Olympic Stadium of the games, of the Olympic Games of rowing.
Nice.
Yeah. So we could use the whole facility to run this this event, and. We had people coming over from Europe as well. And it's been a very decent competition with a good setup that I think the event itself has potential to really develop itself or grow into one of the most important foiling events in the US. This was year one in 2025. But I see this event really establishing very well in the future.
Yeah, he contacted me as well, and we're going to make an episode all about him and he making that event, what it takes to make an event. So all the listeners, viewers, stay tuned for that. Then on my list, there is the foiling week at Lake Garda, pump foil, e-foil, and downwinding as well. I saw some amazing images.
Yeah, this was the only event where we did downwind in 2025. The foiling week, as I explained, it's a concept where a lot of different foil sports come together. It originated in sailing, but the board sports get more traction in it. And we were running the board sports side in Lake Garda, which is, first of all, a beautiful location. I think everybody that has been there and ever been in Lake Garda knows, like, this place is it's just such a crazy scenery. This lake in between the mountains, and the weather is super predictable. So you have always in the morning you can have a wind, then it turns to be glassy, then the wind turns around, it comes from the other side. So it was very well programmed in a way that our sports were always in the mornings while the sailing races were in the afternoon. And it was a really great connection of the foiling community. You know, in the morning, all the top sailors, and there were a lot of sailors that were in Olympics and SailGP, like top pro sailors, they were around the pump foil event and cheering off the guys and watching the competition as well as the e-foiling. And then the other way around, you know, when the afternoon came and the sailboat races were on, all the board sport people were watching what's going on. And we had a really interesting e-foil track within the marina. The challenging part in Lake Garda was definitely that the lake is crazy deep. It's 300 meters deep. So it's not easy to set up a course because you need really long lines. So we had to really be smart enough and have everything as close to the shore as possible. And we did a downwind event. So like, as I said, Lake Garda, it is predictable, but you never know. It can have really good downwind conditions, but you need to be ready in the morning. So you have at sunrise, when the sun kicks in, a north wind that is the best for downwinding, but you never know if it's happening or not.
And you have to get up anyway.
You have to get up anyway, yes, but you need to. And I remember, you know, we had there was no north wind the first couple of days. And then on the first day, we were saying, okay, or the organizer was saying, well, tomorrow there's a chance that, I mean, it was the first day of the downwind window. There was 3 days or window of where we could do the downwind. Nah, it's not going to happen. There was no wind the last days. And then I remember I got up like at 6 in the morning, and we had stayed in an apartment looking down at lake, and it was like full on. It was perfect. It was perfect conditions. And we're like, no way. Like, nobody thought about that. This is going to happen. And, but we couldn't like get ready that quick. You know, it's like in the
morning.
You could
like knock on all the doors and.
Yeah, but the thing is in the morning, it only lasts for 2 hours. You know, you have wind in the sunrise, and it's only 2 hours, and then it dies off. So we were, you need to be ready as soon as the sun rises, and we were not. So we missed on that first day the opportunity, but we were lucky enough that on the second day, exactly the same thing happened, and we were totally ready. And, you know, I remember I got up super early, 5 a.m. before even, it was still dark, looked at the trees, and I saw them moving. So I gave a green light, said, let's do it. We're going to go for the downwind. And we put everybody in the boats and drove them to the other side of the lake. And and did a downwind competition with a like flexible, like everything from boats. So we went up and had everybody on boats, put them up on the start line, said like, the start line is here between the boats. Let's go. We gave a starting signal and we go as far as we can. And then we're going to put the finish line, and you cross the finish line, and that is the race. And it turned out to be like really amazing. You know, like I remember I was driving one of the boats. And I couldn't believe it. I took so many photos and videos just with my phone, because you had just the sun coming up above the mountains in the first sun rays, and had the guys. So we had two divisions. We had people on the paddle, and we had some on a foil assist with foil drive. And it's been a I think a really good good experience in the end. Good images in the morning. And downwinding is definitely one of the disciplines we want to build up on for next season and do a couple more events. Obviously, downwind events are logistically a lot harder than pumping. You know, you need boats for safety. You need more distance. You need the weather conditions. I mean, pumping.
Yeah, you need like a week, and then within that week, you can choose one or 2 days, which is
that's why obviously makes it. That's why the majority, let's say, that all of the five disciplines that we did this year in the SFT, the majority of events were e-foil and pump foil, because these are the easiest ones to organize. Yeah. You need just a piece of water and a couple of buoys and the starting docks for pump foiling, and that's it. But when it comes to surf foiling, to downwinding, you need specific weather conditions, and you don't have them all the time. So, and the logistics are a lot harder. And then for wake foiling, it is not so difficult, but you need a proper boat. And I'm not talking about any boat. You need a boat that can produce a proper wake, and it's not every boat. So that also makes it a bit more complicated. But we for sure want to build up on the downwind discipline. I think it's a great discipline, and it's kind of, let's say, the pinnacle. Like everybody who's into foiling. Kind of dreams of doing downwinding. That's where I think everybody wants to go. But of course, we always have this concept in the end, we want to build a show. You know, we want to also make these sports sellable and interesting for sponsors. And downwind is not an easy format to make it attractive to watch. I think it's amazing for the athletes to participate. But for downwinding, it's hard to run it in a way that it's easy to present for the audience because of the long distance. You cannot watch the whole race unless you make the distance really short. So there's a lot of thoughts that need to be put into it, how to make it a successful discipline that we can really grow and make popular.
I want to just stay at Lake Garda for a second. If I remember correctly, the dock starting situation, that was different to the other events. There was not a one against another one. It was just time trials, and the dock was just like this, I don't know what you call that, not a regular dock, but where you can like put in the small dinghies. Was that the starting situation there? Was that planned that way?
Yeah. As I said, it was not easy to have starting docks in a way that we had at some other competitions. So we had to work with the facility, the marina that was there, on how we can start it. And we could have started it with parallel or two people races, but it would not have been totally fair. So in the end, we decided to run this as a pure time trial race. So we did a lot of different courses and it was just about the time. So all the competitors had to do the same course and were competing about who did the best time. And we used the boat slipping ramp where the boats go in and out. That was fairly suitable, I think, for dog starting. I mean, as you see, I think in every event, it's not standardized yet in palm fording. So every event has different start dogs and some are, I would say, more easier than others. But this is something we want to work on. We want to also change for the future, but it's not as easy as everybody thinks. You know, everybody thinks, I do a palm ford competition. You can jump off any, pier, or you can jump off any boat. No problem. Nah, it's not like this. If you, and especially when it's about competition and you want to have parallel races, you need four dogs. And on the four dogs or three dogs or five dogs, you need to be able to start on the goofy and regular position. So they all need to be exactly the same, and that is not as easy as people think, but I think we made the best out of it, and the athletes adapted to it. In the end, it's just a bit of training. If you have a couple of hours to go train on a dog that you're not used to, you make it work.
Let's talk about good dogs. And I heard that at Traunsee the dogs were perfect. How did that came? Oh, were they specially made for that, for that event, or have they been there before already?
No, they were specially custom made for this event. So obviously, after all the experience we made over the season for the final pump foil event, it was the second last event of the season, but it was the last event for pump foiling. We really knew what we need and what we have, and the organization in Traunsee was very much up for putting up a really good setup. The event setup, I think, for pump foiling was perfect. You know, when they, in the beginning, we discussed and they explained me what they want to do. We had this huge ship, and then talking about a ship that is transporting caterpillars and rocks across the lake. They told me, we're going to have this ship and we're going to attach the dock to it. I was a bit skeptical. But when I came there and I saw that it was a 50 tons boat, it was basically like a pier that would never move. They built, the perfect, I explained them, what size of docks are needed, what height, what length. And they custom made this attached to this boat, parallel to the shore, easy for the spectators to watch. It was a perfect setup. It was probably the best pump for the event we had, I think, also the level. I mean, the boat, I think, also had very good dogs, but obviously only two because the pool was limited and was smaller. In Traunsee, we had the whole lake, so we had a lot of more space. I would say the boat had similar good dogs, but just two. But the organization in Traunsee when it comes to palm foiling was top notch, definitely.
Very nice. And the last event then was Abu Dhabi E-Foil and Wake Foil. It was the only Wake Foil event as well.
Yes. Our final event was in Abu Dhabi, and that's not too long ago. It was just last month, where we had the E-Foil final and we did the only Wake Foil event. Yeah, obviously Abu Dhabi, we had a big event set up. This was also a big festival where we combined all the three world tours. We had a Kite World Cup, a Wing Foil World Cup, and then the SFT with Wake and E-Foiling. It was the only event also that was live streamed. So we had a bit of live stream production and we were able to broadcast the final of Wake and E-Foiling globally through the live streaming, which was also world first. And I think it's something we want to build up in the future as well, although this is usually a budget thing if you can make this happen or not. And on the E-Foil side, we had, I mean, the Emirates, the United Arab Emirates, have a big community of E-Foiling. Like E-Foiling is a big thing over there. A lot of people have E-Foils. It's one of the biggest markets in the world. So we had a lot of, not locals, but I mean, locals in the sense of people that live there, that were competing. There was the highest number of competitors. I was totally stoked about the number of women competing. We had 8 women competing in E-Foiling as we in the separate division, which was awesome and a really good level. Really good setup and organization. And for the wake foiling, we have in the UAE there are plenty of good wakeboard boats as well that are able to you know, to produce the right conditions. We had people coming over from the US, from Canada, and then, yeah, Europe that were participating, as well as the Middle East. Actually, we had also people from Oman competing in the Wakefall event. And yeah, for us, it was the only Wakefall event we did. And I think wakefalling has an advantage that it is due to the predictable conditions, because I mean, you're riding this wake 10 meters behind the boat. It is a discipline that is very easy to broadcast and to present on the media.
Yeah.
I think for the beach, it's maybe not as spectacular, because in the end, you just see the boat passing by. But when you're on the boat, where we had a live streaming on the beach with screens that people that were on the beach could watch the competition actually going on the video walls. It's been good. Yeah, wakefalling in general is, I think, a discipline that is growing, where now compared to wake surfing, for example, you can use a lot more boats for it. You need a good wave, but you don't need the perfect wave. So there is way more boat owners that can probably make use of wakefalling than compared to wake surfing. And it's just fun. If you think in the end you surf a wave that's produced by behind a boat, you can do that on any lake. You don't need to go to the ocean. So obviously, as explained before, logistics needed with the boat and so on make it a bit harder, but it's a discipline that everybody who owns a boat can basically get onto. And I think the last event of the SFT in Abu Dhabi for 2025 was a real success, and it was the perfect event to round up the season, we had the biggest prize money, the live streaming, and it really gave a lot of importance to these disciplines. And a big stage. So we are looking forward to go back there for sure.
All right. I'm not going to tell the listeners all the winners of the different disciplines, also because I'm just going to butcher all their names. I'm just going to focus on the pump foilers. We have Eden Fiondet, who won the pump foiling, and I would say with a pretty big margin. He was so good. He was super fast. He didn't win all the events, but he was always around the first couple of pumpers. And we have him, I had him on the podcast. So if you missed that episode, listen to episode number 66 of Up on Foil. We have Viola Lipic, who won for the women. Also, she was on the podcast a couple of episodes back, where she talks about her experiences. Was super cool. Then I think the second biggest thing was also the e-foiling, as he had many different races. Those two, they stand out for me. Was that the same for you?
Disciplines, you mean the two disciplines?
Yeah, the disciplines, because you had a lot of races with them.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I explained before. I think due to the fact that these two disciplines are the most easy to organize in any kind of location, we had more events in these disciplines than in the other ones. And also because I think these two disciplines are the most easy to make them, to produce them and run them spectator friendly. Which create a good show. Obviously, surf foiling is a great show, but you need to go in a place with waves, and not always a place where you have a lot of people watching. It can be, but necessarily not always. And downwinding is a long distance where you probably will not be able as a spectator to see the start and the finish. You either see the start or the finish, and wake foiling requires a boat. So that's why pump foiling and e-foiling were definitely the events with where we had most competitions going.
Let's quickly talk about the next events, and the next event that is on your website. It's a couple of, it's a little more than a month away as we record. It's a couple of weeks away as this is going to be online. It's again, the boat in Düsseldorf. And unfortunately I cannot come because I have a regular job and I have to work on Friday. So that's a pain. But is there anything planned differently to this year, to 2025?
Yeah. So we're going back. I mean, it's not going to be a huge difference, but what we for sure will improve or want to improve is the timing. We are working on that already since a while. So we're really going to have, as you said, we had a we had a manual stopwatch last year at the first event, and we realized that this is one of the most important, like to keep it professional, this is one of the most important sportive, let's say, criteria to improve, because obviously the competition level is really dense and some of the results are very close to each other. And if you're winning or losing by a split of a second, you want this to be accurate. And yeah. So we will use a light barrier or an infrared system next year, where everything is automated with cameras and the timings are all done by a computer and not by hand. And besides that,
and
we want to improve.
I remember the start situation. You had this like red, green. So people kind of started moving already a bit. Are you planning on changing that? Because I imagine if you just say ready and then go, they cannot like already start to move. Is there anything planned differently?
We haven't thought about doing that differently. I mean, we'll definitely have the start procedure as accurate as possible. We learned that as well throughout the events last year. The start is obviously important, especially if it's a short race, like in the pool where, you know, it's maybe 25-second race and you obviously, you know, having a good start is crucial. But we might be able to also implement a light barrier on the start to see, okay, who goes over earlier, faster. But this part we haven't discussed yet. You know, we will, I think, see and train this. We have a training day on the Friday, like you said, where we're going to test a lot of these new techniques and the timing system as well. And then we'll make a decision how the competition will start on Saturday.
All right, makes a lot of sense. If maybe is there another event that is already like set in stone that people can now look forward to?
Yeah, so we have a couple of events confirmed already, which will be I can already announce things. We also going to add some new disciplines next year. So we're not only going to get stuck by the disciplines we had. Obviously, foiling is evolving. New things are coming in, coming out, and we're going to run also parawing competitions next year.
Hallelujah.
Yes, and the first parawing World Cup will be in Leukat. This I can already tell you. That Leukat will be the first official parawing World Cup. And we are also looking into implementing foil assist as a discipline, because there are more and more people now getting into foil assist technology, or brands getting into technology and people using it. And there are different technologies from foil drive, duotone, the foils, or anything else. Foil assist is, I think, one of the fastest growing and booming technologies or disciplines at the moment in the foiling sport. And we will definitely go back to Transay. This is confirmed for sure. And as well as Abu Dhabi. And about the rest, I think we are working on that at the moment, and not everything is set in stone, but we are releasing the calendar now anytime soon. So just check our website or the Instagram, and you will figure out where the tour is going to go next year. We have a couple of exciting locations.
For the website, it's surffoilworldtour.com, and the Instagram as well, surffoilworldtour. If you're not a follower yet, make sure to follow there and check out the website. I'm looking forward to parawing, man, because that's really the paddle downwinding. It's so difficult. I don't have that much time, but with the parawing, I'm up for it. I might show up at the event, man.
Yes.
But just let me just come back to the bolt, because I remember last year it was new. It was short noticed, so not too many people came, but now people know about it and there's just that much space. Is it still possible for people to sign up? Can you even sign up if you haven't been on the tour last year? How do you manage that?
Yeah, in the boat is kind of a special situation, like you just said, because we are limited in the time we have in the pool. We cannot accept everybody to compete. All our other competitions are completely open. I think the only one that was also limited was Atlanta, because we had also a certain time slot and couldn't have too many people competing. But in any other competition, it's totally open. So if 100 people come, 100 people can compete. But in the boat, we need to limit it due to the limited time we have in the pool. So it is on an invitational basis. But now already, as we are in season number 2, the top riders from the previous year will be pre-qualified, so they have priority. So the top 10 of the pump foil ranking will have priority. If they want to compete, they can get in. Plus, we're going to have, obviously, wild cards that qualify through different criteria. And this is also the boat itself who is choosing. We need, obviously, German competitors, as the event is in Germany, being part of it. We need talents, that young talents that come up. And then you
women
have...
Women as well.
There will be women as well, yeah, of course. And the exhibitors that are part of the board partners, they will have team riders in it as well. So it's going to be a good mix. But the top guys from 2025 ranking already pre-qualified for the event as well.
This is so cool. As soon as, Tom, you can tell us anything about that pairwing race and format so we know how we could train, or do you know it already, how it will work? Or is it just like we're going to have a pairwing event?
Yes, we have discussed this already quite a bit. It's not finalized, but it will be, I can tell you, it will be a racing format. So not a freestyle, not a wave format. Because that was on the table as well. But I think that parawing freestyle is still very niche and there's not a lot of people that get into that yet. So it will be a racing format where, roughly spoken, you go upwind, obviously with a parawing, wind power, then you pack up and you need to downwind without the parawing in your hand. And this is the rough concept. I don't want to go too much in detail, but we are trying to make it spectator orientated, means not having a super long distance. It will be a short to medium distance, but maybe multiple laps, but so that's easy to follow the competition from the beach. And I'm curious as well. I mean, when we decided last year or this year that parawinging, we're going to feature it, we're going to have it in there. We had a lot of push from the industry that parawing, we need to do something. And we see how more and more popular it's becoming. But still, we don't know yet, you know, how will parawinging really develop? You know, I think if we get to the point that freestyle and wave riding will get in certain importance within the sport, maybe we need to start a separate parawing tour with several disciplines, you know, that then gets out of the SFT and then gets his own. It's the Parawing World Tour, you know. But not at this stage yet, you know. I think it's still too early. I think the parawing sport is still too young to really know where it's going to go. My personal opinion about it is I don't think it's going to boom as much as wing foiling did, because I think it's less accessible. More difficult. It's more technical. I think wing foiling is a sport where you can get into foiling without a lot of knowledge before, you know, you can get into it and just learn it from zero. Whereas parawinging is a sport where you need to have already a certain foiling experience to get started in parawinging. It's not something you have never foiled and get on a parawing and the foil and start doing this. You will have a hard, I don't say it's impossible, but you will have a hard time, definitely. I think parawinging is definitely a little bit more advanced foil sport for people that are into foiling already and they want a downwind and they want to use a parawing. So that's why I don't think it's going to have right now the same growth potential that what wing foiling had. You know, if you think about wing foiling the past five years, how it's been exploding, it's crazy. It has, I mean, I myself, I do some parawinging as well now, and it has its attractiveness in a way. I think downwinding is becoming like the ultimate goal for a lot of foilers that don't live on a spot with waves. I mean, here in Mauritius, where we are, we have really good waves and you can ride waves with any foil. But if you don't have waves, downwinding gives you the surfing feeling on a lake or on a flat water spot. And that's why I think a lot of people look up to downwinding. But like you explained, and downwinding, you can do it with a paddle, which is very technical and very hard. I think you need to be super fit and it's not that easy. Parawing is already a little bit easier access into downwinding. That has great potential. And then you have also now Foil Assist that is bringing people into downwinding, which is probably even easier than power winging, but it's just a different way to do it. And it's a little bit more expensive too. So that's where I see at the moment the fascination. And I'm happy to see, like, I mean, I travel a lot around the whole year to different events and different locations. And I see power wings popping up everywhere. You know, not that I see hundreds of power wings yet, but you can see that it's something that catches people all around the world. And there are many, many locations. I think a lot of people thought it's only about strong wind, open ocean winding. You know, even where you're from, people are downwinding on lakes in Switzerland and other locations. Yeah. So the equipment gets more suitable. And I'm not talking only about the power wings, also about the foils. It will draw more and more people into this discipline for sure.
100%. All right, Tom, thank you very much for taking your time again. Is there anything else that you want to just tell the world as the year comes to an end?
Well, I think we have wrapped it up pretty well. I mean, as I explained, I'm very happy how the first season of the SFT went down, you know, having so many events in so many different destinations has been more than I've been expecting on. And I think everybody, the athletes as well as our team, is already very keen what's happening in 2026. And I'm just super excited to be part of, you know, the development and the young years of these sports, because it's, I'm now into foiling for 5 years, like heavily into foiling within for 5 years, I would say. And when I started foiling 5 years ago, I would not have believed that it's gonna spread out in so many subcategories, you know, and aspects, which is great, which I just shows the amazing potential, you know, that it has. It doesn't matter if you wing foil or if you downwind or if you e foil, if you pump foil, if you surf foil, anything that moves on water, is now moving towards hydrofoils. And it is awesome to see. And for me, like I said, you know, who knows, now we're going to add power winging and foil assist next year, maybe in 27. There's already something new. We will all learn that next year. And I'm really excited to be part of this, the history and part of the story.
All right, cool, man. Thank you very much again for coming on the show. I wish you a very happy new year, all the listeners, the viewers. Thank you so much for your support throughout the year. If you like the show, make sure to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or give it some stars on Spotify. All right, man. Have a good night and hope to see you soon.
See you soon. Have a good day.